The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the March-April issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to go right to the front cover, and we see here, wow, the title on the front page, The Ref Issue. And it shows a variety of officials in our sports today. We see football, basketball officials, some people reading about sports, some tackles made, chef, hockey, baseball, women and children, women and men officials. Sounds inviting. We're going to go to see what we have in the lineup for these next 2 months. We have our faves, freeze frame, sports cards, hot take, birthdays on page 11, posters, the treehouse, what's the call, games, art gallery, and Buzz Beamer. From defying death to not pulling the trigger on a trade, these players and teams can thank their lucky stars. That's on page 18. What if NBA stars played every position? It's the LeBrons against the Giannises. Page 22. Goodbye, GOAT. After a stellar career, Tom Brady leaves the NFL as the greatest quarterback ever. That's on page 46. On page 48, Super Bowl MVP Cooper Kupp went into the laboratory and built himself into one of the most dangerous receivers in the NFL. And we have just to the left of the lineups, the ref issue, page 34. It's not easy wearing stripes, so we're paying tribute to the men and women who uphold the rules and keep our games orderly. And we'll go to page 2, freeze frame. Mr. Excitement, January 14th, 2022, Memphis, Tennessee. After electrifying fans all year, Grizzlies guard Ja Morant made his own hair stand on end against the Mavericks. Morant had 19 points, which for him constitute an off night. He was averaging a career-best 26.5 points per game on 49.3% shooting through February 9th, as Memphis got off to a 38-18 start. And it shows him on the page going up with his left hand. Not a dunk this time, but just a normal layup, but he's going up against some heavy competition. Our next freeze frame from the Super Bowl. Pressure point, February 13th, 2020, Inglewood, California. After taking down Joe Burrow twice earlier, Aaron Donald of the Rams came close to tying a Super Bowl record with his third sack of the game on fourth down with less than a minute left in fourth quarter. Cincinnati's quarterback was able to desperately fling the ball downfield before he hit the ground, but it landed harmlessly, icing LA's 23-20 win. Who's who in sports? Page 8. First line, Mariah Bell, United States figure skater. Her height is 5'3". She was born April 18, 1996, in a hometown, Monument, Colorado. At age 25, Bell won the 2022 National Championship, securing her place on the United States Olympic team. She had previously finished in the top three of the Nationals on three occasions. Skating in the competition for the ninth time, Bell placed first in both the short program and the free skate. But did you know Bell became the oldest women single skater to represent the United States at the Olympics since 27-year-old Beatrix Loughran in 1928? Next, we have Troy Leary of the Anaheim Ducks. Forward, hockey. His height is 6 feet. His weight is 185 pounds. He was born September 10, 1997, in his hometown, Denver, Colorado. Terry enjoyed a breakout season in 2021-22. He made his first All-Star team, and through 44 games, he was 7th in the league with 25 goals. Terry had his first NHL hat trick on January 4th against the Flyers. In college, he led the University of Denver to a national championship in 2017, notching two assists in the finals. Did you know Denver has won 8 NCAA hockey titles? Only Michigan, with 9, has won more. And finally, Stetson Bennett, Georgia Bulldogs quarterback. His height is 5'11", his weight is 190 pounds. He was born October 28, 1998, in his hometown, Blackshear, Georgia. After entering the season as Georgia's backup quarterback, Bennett filled in for an injured JT Daniels in the Bulldogs' second game. He threw for 5 touchdowns on just 12 passes and remained the starter, leading Georgia to the CFP, where the Dogs beat Michigan and Alabama to become national champions. Did you know, though, after a redshirt season at Georgia, Bennett left and played 1 year of junior college before returning to the Plains in 2019. Page 9, warm-up, the hot take. Let's take over the hall. Belongs in a museum if the point of Cooperstown to unite generations over a shared history. Why leave a certain era's stars out? Don't look now, but the old people are fighting. The sports writer over 50 have declared war on their 30 and 40-year-old colleagues, and they're winning. In January, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens failed to reach the 75% voting threshold for Baseball Hall of Fame admittance on their 10th and final appearance in the ballot. They now have to hope they will be selected by a committee, something that could happen this year, but is more likely to happen later, if ever. Bonds and Clemens appeared on 66% and 65.2% respectively of the 394 ballots submitted this time. When they first came up for voting in 2013, Clemens got just 37.6% and Bonds 36.2%. It's normal for players to pick up steam as the years go by and their candidates get debated. But no one needs to make a statistical case for these two. Since Babe Ruth retired, no hitter has more wins above replacement than Bonds, 162.7. No other pitcher outside the dead ball era boasts a higher WAR than Clemens, 139.2. They are possibly the two greatest baseball players of all time, and for many, they're also the game's two most infamous cheaters. More than changing minds, Bonds, Clemens' slow climb reflected turnover in the ranks of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Younger, statistically minded voters who grew up looking up to these guys as superheroes have replaced older writers who remember the players of the steroid era as unscrupulous record stealers. According to its website, the Hall of Fame's mission is to preserve the sport's history, honor, excellence within the game, and making connection between the generation of people who enjoy baseball. And how better to make a connection between generations than to foster a decades-long culture war over steroids? One generation, however, is noticeably absent from this conversation. Ours. A photo accompanies that mission statement on the Hall of Fame's website. In it, a group of kids are gathered around a mannequin displaying one of Babe Ruth's uniforms. Let's be real. When a museum talks about fostering connections between the generations, they don't mean between co-workers at sports media companies who disagree about who the all-time home run king is. They're talking about parents bonding with kids over the love of their favorite sport. Put more simply, the Baseball Hall of Fame is for the kids. That's why, as the self-appointed cartoon representative of all baseball-loving youth, I have some demands on how our hall be run in the future. Number one, let the alleged cheaters in. The traditionalists have won the battle, but they're losing the war. The old guard kept a handful of players out as a parting shot, like 300 Spartans defending the pass of Thermopylae against an inevitable Persian invasion, except way less heroic, glamorous, or otherwise impressive. After all, I know what's really going on. the olds and olders may rehash the tired Barry Bonds versus Ted Williams debates because they're not ready to admit that Mike Trout has already surpassed them both. They're both ignoring that the game has moved on. Barry Bonds is an ancient history. The time between when he hit his 500th home run and today is the same number of years as between the end of World War I and the start of World War II. So put him in the museum already. Number two, create a young timers committee. There exist various veteran committees who consider the candidacy of people who have been overlooked for one reason or another. But too often, like in the case of people like Mark McGwire, you're just asking the same generation of voters for the same answer twice. To get a truly fresh perspective, get some fans too young to have seen any of these guys play. I'm proposing a group of kids who will review statistics, YouTube videos, and old press clippings to see who stands out. We'll submit a few names, and in the spirit of proper parental supervision, give a veterans committee limited veto power. Number three, return my letters. Why am I not voting in the regular Hall of Fame elections along with other big-name writers? If the Baseball Writers Association of America would have just admitted me in the first place, I wouldn't have had to propose this whole scheme. Is this about that one hot take I promised not to mention anymore? I told Tom Verducci, I'm sorry. I'm a real writer. I have fan mail, page 16. I'm not asking to be an inductee yet. I just want to vote. Let me in. Next, we have crowdsourcing, serendipitous in Seattle. Any team's inaugural home game represents the opportunity for historic firsts, but the Kraken's open contest in Seattle had a likely first for any team ever, a fan saving the life of someone on the opposite bench. Canucks assistant equipment manager Brian Red Hamilton was making preparations between periods when a Kraken fan got his attention by pressing her phone against the glass. It had a note for Hamilton that he should get a mole on the back of his neck checked out. Separated by the plexiglass, Hamilton couldn't do much but acknowledge the message. After the game, however, his doctors confirmed the fan's suspicions and removed the cancerous mole. The Canucks posted a letter on Twitter on January 1st, explaining what had happened and asking the internet to help them find the fan. One person replied, "This is my daughter, Nadia Popovici," adding, "She has no idea what's going on because she's asleep." Eventually, Hamilton got the chance to thank Popovici, who is studying to become a doctor. The Canucks and Kraken team up to give her $10,000 toward her education. Birthdays, March. March 1st, Bengals receiver Ja'Marr Chase is 22 years old. March 9th, Najee Harris of the Steelers turns 24. March 14th, Steph Curry celebrates his 34th birthday. March 16th, Team USA Luge teammates Ashley Farquharson and Emily Sweeney turn 23 and 29, respectively. And Monday, March 27th, Giants catcher Buster Posey is 35 years old. Warm-up, future star. Page 12, Caitlin Jong. Her birthplace is Allen, Texas. Her birth date is July 28, 2006. Her sport, gymnastics. Underneath a cool, calm exterior, Caitlin Jong still gets anxious. You never have known it watching her complete a standing full, a twisting backflip, on the balance beam for the first time last May. "I try my best to keep my composure," Caitlin says. "I don't think about anything else that might distract me." In 2021, she won four golds, team, all-around, vault, and uneven bars, and a silver on the beam at the Junior Pan American Championships. United States national team member, she will make the jump to senior-level competition this year. Are you a sports kid? If you think you have what it takes to be a future star, have an adult submit your nomination at sportskid@si.com. Interview by kid reporter Anna Leibel. The Grid. Dude Perfect. Comedic Trick Shot Troupe. Interviewees this month, we have Corey Cotton, Garrett Hilbert, Tyler Tony, Kobe Cotton, and Cody Jones. Here's the question, first one. What job would you want if you weren't in Dude Perfect? Corey, well, I would be working at the Apple Store. Garrett, architect. Tyler Tony, game warden. Kobe Cotton, fireman. Cody Jones, stunt double. Next question. What was your favorite subject in school? Corey, English. Garrett, art. Tyler, lunch. Kobe, recess. And Cody, history. Next question. What's your hidden talent? Corey, I can wiggle my ears. Garrett, I'm a world-class athlete. Tyler Tony, I'm an excellent whipcracker. Kobe Cotton, I'm an above-average whistler. Cody Jones, I can dislocate my shoulder a lot. Next question, what's the best gift you ever received? Corey, a puppy that I got in North Carolina when I was 7. Garrett, when my dad surprised me with my first car. Tyler Tony, I got my first guitar in 5th grade. Kobe Cotton, I got an amazing remote control car when I was in 1st grade. Cody Jones, sugar cookies. Next, what's your favorite emoji? Corey Cotton, tears. Garrett, teethy grin. Tyler, no, that's it, no. Kobe Cotton, tears. And Cody Jones, a rock. Who was your favorite athlete growing up? Corey says Horace Grant. Garrett says Michael Finley. Tyler, Rusty Greer. Kobe, Michael Jordan. And Cody, Mike Modano. Final question, what's the hardest skill to learn in your sport? Corey Cotton says throwing blitz balls. Garrett Hilbert says perseverance. Tyler Tony says accuracy. Kobe Cotton says finding friends outside of this group who will rebound for you. Cody Jones hitting out of a sand trap on a golf course. Moving on to page 14, warm-up, art attack, origin stories. In our most recent issue, artist Tim McDonough illustrated Detroit Wings star Dylan Larkin as a superhero keeping watch over the Motor City. We asked our readers to dream up their own athlete superheroes, and submissions flooded our inbox like Avengers emerging from portals. Some of you, such as Winter Hannah, drew entire comic book pages. Here are the most fantastic. We have Treacherous, T.Y. Hilton, Mason, age 11, Indiana. We have Steph, the Warrior, standing on top of a large building. That's from Allen, age 11, from Kentucky. Mike, the Wingfish, Trout. That's from Vinny, age 8 in Illinois. We have Lonzo, the Minotaur, Ball. That's from Jack, age 10 from Colorado. And the winner, Hannah, age 12 from Maryland, with Justin, the Cantador, Tucker. Moving on to reader engagement, page 16, Kip's Mailbox. You wrote, and he answered. Thanks for keeping Kip busy so he doesn't bother us. To have your letter appear in a future issue, email kip.shoremore@si.com. Jackson writes, Hi, Kip. why 12-minute quarters in basketball and not shorter, like maybe six? Thanks. P.S. Say hi to Buzz for me. Buzz says, sup. He's very excited you mentioned him, maybe a little too excited. Anyway, the 12-minute quarter structure certainly isn't set in stone. While the NBA uses this system, FIBA and WNBA quarters are 10 minutes long, and the NCAA opts for two 20-minute halves. The college clock is closer to James Naismith's original 13 rules of basketball, which call for two 15-minute halves. But I can think of two parties who wouldn't want NBA games that are half as long. Players trying to pad their stats and television advertisers. Micah writes, hello, Kip. I love reading your mailbag and have been thinking, why do certain teams that have so many big guns, Lakers, sometimes just crash and end up seemingly mediocre? This isn't even the first time this has happened to the Lakers. In 2012-2013, on an LA super team headlined by Steve Nash, disappointed. This season's Lakers stink for the same reason as Nash's, the 1992 Mets and the 2010 Washington Commanders. By the time a bunch of stars reach a big market club, they're typically old and a little overpaid. Keon writes, hi, Kip. Why do baseball and basketball leagues have 30 teams? Why not more or less? I love your column. Thanks. Why not indeed? Baseball, in particular, hasn't expanded in more than 20 years. Charlotte, Las Vegas, Nashville, and Portland get tossed around as potential new Major League Baseball sites. But let's think bigger. Baseball is popular throughout the Americas. It's quicker to fly from New York City to Mexico City than from the Big Apple to L.A. The Marlins are closer to Santo Domingo than their division opponent in Philly. It's time a 50-team league that crosses more than just the Canadian border. Colin writes, hi, Kip. I love watching football, but sometimes I feel like the way the NFL does overtime isn't exactly right. First off, I think the home team captain should get to call the toss. If it's your field, you get the honors. Also, I think that no matter what, both teams should get an opportunity on offense. It isn't necessarily fair that all one team has to do is drive down and get a touchdown, while the other team has to try to prevent that from happening. That puts a lot of pressure on the defense. P.S., have you ever considered tilting your column or titling your column The Whole Kip and Caboodle? Kylan, you wouldn't happen to live in Buffalo, would you? After that Bills-Chiefs playoff game, I bet everyone is rethinking the NFL's playoff, especially the NFL. Here's an idea you won't see anywhere else. Penalty kicks. So many games get decided by high-pressure boot from the place kicker. Why not go to a kickoff? And it's NHL shootout rules. After the kicker and punter go, the other players have to start trying. Imagine a 300-pound lineman kicking an extra point to win the Super Bowl. And there's a goalie suspended by wires between the uprights like Spider-Man. By the way, I like your idea for the name of my column. That's the kind of top-notch poonery we could use at SI Kids. I've told my editors to step up their games. Uniton writes, dear Kip, why can't baseball be once a week like football? Then your ace pitcher pitches every game. Also, the problem with baseball is that it isn't a big deal whether or not a team wins a single game. If baseball was once a week, this would solve the problem. Oh, Yonatan, think of the poor number 2, 3, 4, and 5 starters you're trying to put out of a job. With closers pitching on a full week's rest, long and middle relievers won't be needed either. You could probably shrink the 26-man roster down to about 14. Putting aside these labor relations issues, let's look at it from the opposite perspective. the NFL would probably schedule more games if it could. After all, it snuck in a Week 18 this season. But football is too grueling to play every day, and that's what makes it special. It has its own day of the week, and the emphasis is on long-term planning and strategy. Baseball's strategic battle happens that fly. Every pitch is an adjustment for hitter and pitcher. Besides, Unitan, everything is relative. In a world in which everyone is an ace, no one is an ace. Think about it. Clayton writes, Dear Kip, this is Clayton Robin from Denver, Colorado. I have a question. A few months ago, I was watching golf with my dad, and Jordan Spieth and Henrik Stenson were hitting, but they were on the wrong tee box and didn't know, and then hit. This counted as a two-stroke penalty, and I don't think that's fair. Also, I think there should be someone there to say, hey, Jordan, Henrik, wrong tee, this way. Your biggest fan, Clayton. Clayton, you're just in time for the ref issue. We've talked to some of the top officials across sports, and we're in a unique position to sort out some of sports' silliest rules. Fortunately for us, and unfortunately for Spieth and Stenson, no sports rules are as unpredictable as golf's. In 2019, Russell Henley discovered a ball that wasn't his usual brand in his bag while signing autographs for fans. After reporting the confounding ball to tournament officials, he was assessed an 8-stroke penalty. That minor mix-up discovered after his round meant he missed the cut. Also in 2019, Paul Casey won the European Championship, but he almost blew it when a putt rolled over a caterpillar. I won't go on. We need to save some of these weird rules for future editions of What's the Call. Ironically, golf is the one major sport notable for its inconspicuous officials. But I think you're right there. There should be a person at each hole directing traffic. Sportsmanship is thinking it's better to beat someone at their best than to win on technicality. That's something Penny and Whitney, who challenge me in Madden only when I'm sleepy after eating a plate of cookies, will ever understand. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.